I'm Gene Randall in Washington, where we await a nationally televised speech from President Bush. It could be one of his most important. It'll focus on U.S. nuclear forces, defense strategy, and national security needs in a rapidly changing world. The president earlier today promised an address with what he called major worldwide implications for peace. Mr. Bush will be speaking from the Oval Office, and before he begins, we have a chance to check in with CNN's senior White House correspondent Charles Bierbauer. Charles, what do we expect?
Ever since the attempted coup in the Soviet Union and its dramatic reversal, President Bush and his advisors have been contemplating what to do next in terms of the strategic relationship between the U.S. and the Soviet Union, as well as the allies around the world. The president assesses that it is indeed time to move well beyond the strategic arms agreement that he and President Gorbachev signed in Moscow back in July. That cut forces on both sides by about 30%. What the president will address tonight is even deeper cuts in various areas. Already we have heard in recent weeks and days the assessment that tactical nuclear weapons are really of no purpose in today's world. That's on the table now. Sea-launched cruise missiles were never part of U.S. negotiating tactics. Sources say they will be from now. So much is to be heard from President Bush addressing a new defense and strategic nuclear balance. Charles Bierbauer, CNN at the White House.
Our military affairs correspondent Wolf Blitzer is in Moscow. He'll listen to the speech there. We'll check in with him later when Mr. Bush is finished speaking. And now, from the White House Oval Office, the President of the United States, George Bush.
Good evening. Tonight, I'd like to speak with you about our future and the future of the generations to come. The world has changed at a fantastic pace, with each day writing a fresh page of history before yesterday's ink is even dried. And most recently, we've seen the peoples of the Soviet Union turn to democracy and freedom and discard a system of government based on oppression and fear. Like the East Europeans before them, they face the daunting challenge of building fresh political structures based on human rights, democratic principles, and market economies. Their task is far from easy and far from over. They will need our help, and they will get it. But these dramatic changes challenge our nation as well. Our country has always stood for freedom and democracy, and when the newly elected leaders of Eastern Europe grappled with forming their new governments, they looked to the United States. They looked to American democratic principles in building their own free societies. Even the leaders of the USSR republics are reading the Federalist Papers, written by America's founders, to find new ideas and inspiration. Today, America must lead again, as it always has, as only it can, and we will. We must also provide the inspiration for lasting peace, and we will do that too. We can now take steps in response to these dramatic developments, steps that can help the Soviet peoples in their quest for peace and prosperity. More importantly, we can now take steps to make the world a less dangerous place than ever before in the nuclear age. A year ago, I described a new strategy for American defenses, reflecting the world's changing security environment. That strategy shifted our focus away from the fear that preoccupied us for 40 years, the prospect of a global confrontation. Instead, it concentrated more on regional conflicts, such as the one we just faced in the Persian Gulf. I spelled out a strategic concept, guided by the need to maintain the forces required to exercise forward presence in key areas, to respond effectively in crises, to maintain a credible nuclear deterrent, and to retain the national capacity to rebuild our forces should that be needed. We are now moving to reshape the U.S. military to reflect that concept. The new base force will be smaller by 500,000 than today's military, with fewer army divisions, air force wings, navy ships, and strategic nuclear forces. This new force will be versatile, able to respond around the world to challenges old and new. As I just mentioned, The changes that allowed us to adjust our security strategy a year ago have greatly accelerated. The prospect of a Soviet invasion into Western Europe, launched with little or no warning, is no longer a realistic threat. The Warsaw Pact is crumbled. In the Soviet Union, the advocates of democracy triumphed over a coup that would have restored the old system of repression. The reformers are now starting to fashion their own futures, moving even faster toward democracy's horizon. New leaders in the Kremlin and the republics are now questioning the need for their huge nuclear arsenal. The Soviet nuclear stockpile now seems less an instrument of national security and more of a burden. As a result, we now have an unparalleled opportunity to change the nuclear posture of both the United States and the Soviet Union. If we and the Soviet leaders take the right steps, some on our own, some on their own, some together, we can dramatically shrink the arsenal of the world's nuclear weapons. We can more effectively discourage the spread of nuclear weapons. We can rely more on defensive measures in our strategic relationship. We can enhance stability and actually reduce the risk of nuclear war. Now is the time to seize this opportunity. After careful study and consultations with my senior advisors, and after considering valuable counsel from Prime Minister Major, President Mitterrand, Chancellor Kohl, and other allied leaders, I am announcing today a series of sweeping initiatives affecting every aspect of our nuclear forces on land, on ships, and on aircraft. I met again today with our Joint Chiefs of Staff, and I can tell you they wholeheartedly endorse each of these steps. I'll begin with the category in which we will make the most fundamental change in nuclear forces in over 40 years, non-strategic or theater weapons. Last year, I canceled U.S. plans to modernize our ground-launched theater nuclear weapons. Later, our NATO allies joined us in announcing that the alliance would propose the mutual elimination of all nuclear artillery shells from Europe as soon as short-range nuclear force negotiations began with the Soviets. But starting these talks now would only perpetuate these systems while we engage in lengthy negotiations. Last month's events not only permit, but indeed demand swifter, bolder action. I'm therefore directing that the United States eliminate its entire worldwide inventory of ground-launched, short-range, that is, theater, nuclear weapons. We will bring home and destroy all of our nuclear artillery shells and short-range ballistic missile warheads. We will, of course, ensure that we preserve an effective air-delivered nuclear capability in Europe. That's essential to NATO's security. In turn, I have asked the Soviets to go down this road with us, to destroy their entire inventory of ground-launch theater nuclear weapons, not only their nuclear artillery and nuclear warheads for short-range ballistic missiles, but also the theater systems the U.S. no longer has, systems like nuclear warheads for air defense missiles and nuclear landmines. Recognizing further the major changes in the international military landscape, the United States will withdraw all tactical nuclear weapons from its surface ships and attack submarines, as well as those nuclear weapons associated with our land-based naval aircraft. This means removing all nuclear Tomahawk cruise missiles from U.S. ships and submarines, as well as nuclear bombs aboard aircraft carriers. The bottom line is that under normal circumstances, our ships will not carry tactical nuclear weapons. Many of these land and sea-based warheads will be dismantled and destroyed. Those remaining will be secured in central areas where they would be available if necessary in a future crisis. Again, there is every reason for the Soviet Union to match our actions by removing all tactical nuclear weapons from its ships and attack submarines, by withdrawing nuclear weapons for land-based naval aircraft, and by destroying many of them and consolidating what remains at central locations. I urge them to do so. No category of nuclear weapons has received more attention than those in our strategic arsenals. The Strategic Arms Reduction Treaty, START, which President Gorbachev and I signed last July, was the culmination of almost a decade's work. It calls for substantial stabilizing reductions and effective verification. Prompt ratification by both parties is essential. But I also believe the time is right to use START as a springboard to achieve additional stabilizing changes. First, to further reduce tensions, I'm directing that all United States strategic bombers immediately stand down from their alert posture. As a comparable gesture, I call upon the Soviet Union to confine its mobile missiles to their garrisons, where they will be safer and more secure. Second, the United States will immediately stand down from alert all intercontinental ballistic missiles scheduled for deactivation under START. Rather than waiting for the treaty's reduction plan to run its full 7-year course, we will accelerate elimination of these systems once START is ratified. I call upon the Soviet Union to do the same. Third, I am terminating the development of the mobile peacekeeper ICBM, as well as the mobile portions of the small ICBM program. The small single warhead ICBM will be our only remaining ICBM modernization program. And I call upon the Soviets to terminate any and all programs for future ICBMs with more than one warhead, and to limit ICBM modernization to one type of single warhead missile, just as we have done. And fourth, I am canceling the current program to build a replacement for the nuclear short-range attack missile for our strategic bombers. And fifth, as a result of the strategic nuclear weapons adjustments that I've just outlined, the United States will streamline its command and control procedures, allowing us to more effectively manage our strategic nuclear forces. As the system works now, the Navy commands the submarine part of our strategic deterrent, while the Air Force commands the bomber and land-based elements. But as we reduce our strategic forces, the operational command structure must be as direct as possible. And I therefore approve the recommendation of Secretary Cheney and the Joint Chiefs to consolidate operational command of these forces into a U.S. strategic command under one commander with participation from both services. Since the 1970s, the most vulnerable and unstable part of the U.S. and Soviet nuclear forces has been intercontinental missiles with more than one warhead. Both sides have these ICBMs in fixed silos in the ground where they are more vulnerable than missiles on submarines. I propose that the U.S. and the Soviet Union seek early agreement to eliminate from their inventories all ICBMs with multiple warheads. After developing a timetable acceptable to both sides, we could rapidly move to modify or eliminate these systems under procedures already established in the START agreement. In short, such an action would take away the single most unstable part of our nuclear arsenals. But there is more to do. The United States and the Soviet Union are not the only nations with ballistic missiles. Some 15 nations have them now, and in less than a decade, that number could grow to 20. The recent conflict in the Persian Gulf demonstrates in no uncertain terms that the time has come for strong action on this growing threat to world peace. Accordingly, I am calling on the Soviet leadership to join us in taking immediate concrete steps to permit the limited deployment of non-nuclear defenses to protect against limited ballistic missile strikes, whatever their source, without undermining the credibility of existing deterrent forces. And we will intensify our effort to curb nuclear and missile proliferation. These two efforts will be mutually reinforcing. To foster cooperation, the United States soon will propose additional initiatives in the area of ballistic missile early warning. And finally, let me discuss yet another opportunity for cooperation that can make our world safer. During last month's attempted coup in Moscow, many Americans asked me if I thought Soviet nuclear weapons were under adequate control. I do not believe that America was at increased risk of nuclear attack during those tense days. But I do believe more can be done to ensure the safe handling and dismantling of Soviet nuclear weapons. And therefore, I propose that we begin discussions with the Soviet Union to explore cooperation in three areas. First, we should explore joint technical cooperation on the safe and environmentally responsible storage, transportation, dismantling, and destruction of nuclear warheads. Second, we should discuss existing arrangements for the physical security and safety of nuclear weapons and how these might be enhanced. And third, we should discuss nuclear command and control arrangements and how these might be improved to provide more protection against the unauthorized or accidental use of nuclear weapons. My friend, French President Mitterrand, offered a similar idea a short while ago. After further consultations with the alliance, and when the leadership in the USSR is ready, we will begin this effort. The initiatives that I'm announcing build on the new defense strategy that I set out a year ago, one that shifted our focus away from the prospect of global confrontation. We're consulting with our allies on the implementation of many of these steps, which fit well with the new post-Cold War strategy and force posture that we've developed in NATO. As we implement these initiatives, we will closely watch how the new Soviet leadership responds. We expect our bold initiatives to meet with equally bold steps on the Soviet side. If this happens, further cooperation is inevitable. If it does not, then an historic opportunity will have been lost. Regardless, let no one doubt, we will still retain the necessary strength to protect our security and that of our allies and to respond as necessary. In addition, regional instabilities, the spread of weapons of mass destruction, and as we saw during the conflict in the Gulf, territorial ambitions of power-hungry tyrants, still require us to maintain a strong military to protect our national interests and to honor commitments to our allies. And therefore, we must implement a coherent plan for a significantly smaller but fully capable military. One that enhances stability, but is still sufficient to convince any potential adversary that the cost of aggression would exceed any possible gain. We can safely afford to take the steps I've announced today. Steps that are designed to reduce the dangers of miscalculation in a crisis. But to do so, we must also pursue vigorously those elements of our strategic modernization program that serve the same purpose. We must fully fund the B-2 and SDI program. We can make radical changes in the nuclear postures of both sides to make them smaller, safer, and more stable. But the United States must maintain modern nuclear forces, including the strategic triad, and thus ensure the credibility of our deterrent. Some will say that these initiatives call for a budget windfall for domestic programs, but the peace dividend I seek is not measured in dollars, but in greater security. In the near term, some of these steps may even cost money, given the ambitious plan I have already proposed to reduce U.S. defense spending by 25%, we cannot afford to make any unwise or unwarranted cuts in the defense budget that I have submitted to Congress. I'm counting on congressional support to ensure we have the funds necessary to restructure our forces prudently and implement the decisions that I've outlined tonight. 20 years ago, when I had the opportunity to serve this country as ambassador to the United Nations, I once talked about the vision that was in the minds of the UN's founders, how they dreamed of a new age when the great powers of the world would cooperate in peace as they had as allies in war. Today, I consulted with President Gorbachev, and while he hasn't had time to absorb the details, I believe the Soviet response will clearly be positive. I also spoke with President Yeltsin, and he had a similar reaction, positive, hopeful. And now the Soviet people and their leaders can shed the heavy burden of a dangerous and costly nuclear arsenal which has threatened world peace for the past 5 decades. They can join us in these dramatic moves toward a new world of peace and security. Tonight, as I see the drama of democracy unfolding around the globe, perhaps we are closer to that new world than ever before. The future is ours to influence, to shape, to mold. And while we must not gamble that future, neither can we forfeit the historic opportunity now before us. It has been said, destiny is not a matter of chance. It is a matter of choice. It is not a thing to be waited for. It's a thing to be achieved. The United States has always stood where duty required us to stand. And now let them say that we led where destiny required us to lead, to a more peaceful, hopeful future. We cannot give a more precious gift to the children of the world. Thank you, good night, and God bless the United States of America.
So President Bush from the Oval Office tonight at the White House has announced dramatic cuts in the U.S. nuclear stockpile, including the virtual elimination worldwide of all U.S. short-range tactical nuclear weapons, ground and sea launched. He also called on the Soviet Union to agree on the elimination of all multiple warhead ICBMs on both sides. Buttressing all of this, what the President said was the unparalleled opportunity presented by the crumbling of the Communist Party in the Soviet Union. And Mr. Bush said, let's not gamble, but let's use this opportunity that we have. Our military affairs correspondent Wolf Blitzer has watched all this from Moscow. He joins us now live. Wolf, what do you see as the likely Soviet reaction?
Gene, the Soviets are likely to respond very favorably. Indeed, the Russian Federation President Boris Yeltsin has already issued a statement welcoming the president's remarks. The Soviet President Mikhail Gorbachev has not yet officially responded, but he too is likely to respond very favorably. Indeed, over this past month, in the aftermath of the coup, there has been a great deal of concern expressed here in the Soviet Union by Soviet analysts, including Soviet military leaders, over the security, the potential security, especially of the tactical short-range nuclear missiles. And indeed, I think the Soviets will respond very favorably. They will welcome this development. Gene?
All right, let's go back to the White House and our senior correspondent there, Charles Bierbauer. Charles, is the president waving something in front of the Soviets he figures they really can't refuse?
He certainly hopes so. A point worth noting, it took 9 years to negotiate the START agreement that was signed this summer. What officials here are saying now that they hope the Soviets see the wisdom of taking reciprocal actions, not over a long period of negotiating, but the sort of things that the president is announcing. A couple of things encourage the U.S. What they have been hearing from Yeltsin, from Gorbachev, from the Republic presidents who say they don't want nuclear weapons in their republics anymore. This gives them a way out for dismantling some of those very quickly. And even the Soviet defense minister says he doesn't need tactical nuclear weapons anymore. That's what the Pentagon likes to hear. Gene?
We'll be back with the Democratic response right after this. Senate Majority Leader George Mitchell of Maine.
Good evening. 46 years ago, in the early morning darkness, on a remote desert in New Mexico, the first atomic bomb was exploded. It was a turning point in human history. Men had always used weapons to fight wars, to kill and maim their enemies. But until then, no one had within his control destructive power so great as to threaten the existence of life on our planet. Nuclear weapons have that power. Because they do, men and women have struggled for nearly half a century to limit their spread and prevent their use. There has been no nuclear holocaust, but the number of nuclear weapons has grown. There are tens of thousands of nuclear devices in countries all over the world, and many other countries are trying to develop them. The nuclear arms race and the race against the nuclear holocaust have been on a collision course. Through resolve, skill, and some luck, disaster has been averted. But the threat remains real and dangerous. We now have the opportunity to change course, to move away from the nuclear abyss, to reduce the likelihood of conflict, to enhance the prospect for peace. That's why we welcome the president's statement. We're pleased that the president has accepted the view we've been urging for years. It's time to change our policy to meet the changes taking place throughout the world. Those changes have been dramatic. The human desire for freedom is irresistible. It has swept across Eastern Europe and reached all the way into the Kremlin, into what was the heart of communist totalitarianism. The breakup of the Soviet Union presents us with a rare opportunity to reverse the dangerous upward spiral in the arms race. We must seize that opportunity and reduce the numbers and types of nuclear weapons. The president's proposal moves in that direction. For that reason, it will have our support. We're especially pleased that the president has dropped his plan to deploy MX missiles on rail cars. Just yesterday, the president urged the Senate to provide funding for that plan. Led by Senator Jim Sasser of Tennessee, the Senate refused. That the president has so swiftly abandoned his plan and accepted the Senate's decision is a credit to him and to the Senate. 3 years ago, Senator Sam Nunn of Georgia proposed joint U.S.-Soviet consultation on risk reduction. It made sense then. It makes sense now. The president's embrace of Senator Nunn's proposal is a good and gratifying step. 9 years ago, Senator Al Gore of Tennessee proposed a ban on multiple warhead missiles and deployment of a single warhead missile as a more stable alternative. Tonight, the president adopted that proposal. Peace is and has been the American goal.